All right, maybe you guys should text in and help out this listener who said a client is in town from Austin, Texas. Free night tonight, looking for a restaurant recommendation. Well, Uber anywhere. Happy to grab a seat at the bar. Where do you send it? So that's your challenge at 651-461-9226. I have some ideas. I'll let you know at 4:30. And we're giving away Twins tickets today. We're giving away Twins tickets.
Not now.
But when you hear the Twins, Win Twins sounder, call in and be caller three. And those tickets are for Saturday night against Kansas City. Let's welcome our next guest to talk about, can you insult AI? Greg Swan explains the internet.
From viral chaos to tech.
Greg, if I insult that song, if I tell the machine that created that song, this sucks, you're an idiot, or worse, is there anything wrong with that?
I think that's what we need to figure out. Is that unethical? Is there a line? Can you be prejudiced against technology? Can you invent a slur for these things?
There's a term for this. And that term is clanker.
Ooh, we didn't get beeped. So
I'm allowed to say that?
I think we're okay.
All right. Why are ethicists struggling with this? The only struggle about this, sort of tangentially related that I've heard about, is this sort of energy related question on whether we should be thanking, like saying thank you to Alexa or thank you to ChatGPT. Because that does require like the whole sit. So this is sort of like the next level of that question, but you're getting into kind of an interesting ethical area.
It really is. And think about how much technology is now into all of our lives to the point where we have frustrating moments with this technology, whether that is your phone's voice to text doesn't work, your Alexa in your home, like the timer doesn't go off for your frozen pizza, or your smart car doesn't start. And what's happening is there's starting to be some pushback, plus the AI thing, the idea that some of this technology could impact our livelihoods and our way of life. Yeah. We're starting to see some coalescing around pushback. And one of those things is this new word, which actually has a fascinating history of clanker, where they're saying, you know, you clanker, get out of my way. With like imagine a delivery robot in the sidewalk in front of you, and you'd be like, clanker, get out of the way.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a fun robot like creating coffee or popcorn, handing it to you. You'd be like, oh, the clankers have taken our jobs. Now, in the future, we could look back and this entire episode could maybe get you and I canceled for using that language.
For using this term, because it, you know, meanings of words change.
They change over time.
Yeah.
My kids would say this is not a thing and the media is making it a thing, and that the more that we talk about it, even today, are we making it happen? But where does that word come from? It comes from Star Wars. Of course it comes from Star Wars.
Dan Cook was sitting there as our resident Star Wars nerd.
I knew.
And the clanker in the Star Wars
it's what the clone stormtroopers called the robot droid army figures.
Yeah, so imagine in the heat of battle, and we've had this over generations, like you come up with derogatory phrases to call the enemy.
Sure.
That's what happened in Star Wars. Now that's being pulled forward into culture. And I think at first, ironically, as a nod to that, is geek culture. And now maybe tipping over more into the mainstream as more people are feeling some of that. So one of the things we talked about on the podcast that I do with Jenny Swan, The Cave Project, is we really dove into the emotional side of that, of saying thank you, of being angry at your robot vacuum, of the idea of maybe part of your job was taken by this thing. And there's a real tension there. And also, I don't say thank you to my voice assistants.
I used to, and I don't now.
And, you know, digging into that a little bit, like, maybe we should. I don't know.
Yeah. It is a funny thing in a way to think about, because like I have for sure like yelled at Siri before for like not answering me correctly. And my wife's car has like a smart thing that sometimes is dumb. And I wouldn't, I guess on the face of it, it seems preposterous because I wouldn't treat a human that way.
No.
So who cares if I'm just yelling at a machine?
And yet, think about a robot dog, and we feel both, we're a little scared of that, and also if someone was kicking that robot dog, you would feel bad. We project humanity onto things, like almost like, imagine your robot vacuum with googly eyes on it. You're going to feel different. We give them names. We give our cars names.
True.
We give lots of things names. Why? Because we're personifying them. And so is it only natural now, as the internet is progressing, as technology is progressing, for us to feel tension there and need language to put them down? Unfortunately, I think so.
Really interesting. I don't know. I feel it is one of those things that we may look back on, right? Because part of the negative of being mean to robots is that part of the AI is that they're taking all of this in and learning from it. So you can take the one hand, you and me being mean to a robot, but we've also seen what happens when people are like anti-Semitic or racist to like Grok, the Twitter AI, or to ChatGPT. And that kind of disturbing things can happen as a result of that, right? So there are like real consequences to some of this.
There are. And unfortunately, racism, prejudice, discrimination is part of how the human experience. And now that the robots are more into our human experience, we're starting to put them in some of those same places. And today, there's not hate speech against that. There is not necessarily laws against that. In the future, some have said there could be like an AI or a robot like Bill of Rights and those sorts of things. I think we are very far away from that. And also, to me, these are those signals of where society is feeling some tension and saying that doesn't feel so good, and starting to center around some of this language is a signal of where those things could be going.
A texter says, I always say thank you to our future robot overlords.
Excellent. There's the karma approach.
That is the karma approach.
I'm going to put in all the thank yous and everything now, so it's on the record.
I do it sometimes. I say thank you. And then since I've read about the energy waste that comes from that, now I've stopped doing it. But this is part of when you have a nascent technology like that, we're always trying to figure out like, all right, like, what am I supposed to do about that?
Yeah, well, and
that's a good thing that we're struggling with.
I think so.
Yeah.
And I love thinking about Rosie the Robot from the Jetsons. It was only on for a couple of seasons. It's impacted our idea of sci-fi so much.
True.
To have this home helper robot. Imagine not being polite to Rosie.
Yeah.
Not saying thank you, not treating her right. And there are new personal home helper robots that are coming to market right now, $5,000-$6,000, that will be able to do basic things in your home. We are years away, probably in January, coming out of the Consumer Electronics Show. I'll have some of those to share with you that are a little more affordable or realistic. But as those pieces of technology are further humanized, we assign emotion to them, and they're part of our lives, I would hope that we do have decorum with them, and that I would want them to treat me the same way.
I mean, I got to believe that most of our audience is listening to this and just thinking, what an absolute load. Like, because it is a little, like, it's a little preposterous.
It is. And yet, if you go search for clankers on the internet and start watching some of these videos, you're going to see people really doing some damage to technology and these robots. And I think remember when they drained Mississippi River under the Stonehenge Bridge and they found all those bird scooters?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, some people maybe threw the bird scooters in to, you know, they don't believe in them or whatever, but also there was some real animosity about those things on our sidewalks and where they were. And I think that people often are trying to organize around or something that maybe they can't verbalize through actions. And some of the content that you'll find online around this term clankers is really disturbing. And it really shows that we are working through some stuff as a society when it comes to how technology is impacting our daily life.
All right. I did put a picture of Rosie up on the YouTube.
Bless
stream.
Her heart. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you could never. Now, what I say to Siri, I would never say to Rosie?
Oh, my gosh, right?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Let's break. It's 419. When we come back, we're going to talk about the age-gated internet, online anonymity, privacy. Are you, and I've had to do it, take a picture of my driver's license and then say a little prayer that someone doesn't steal this? What are you doing with these conundrums? We'll talk about that when we come back. Greg Swan explains the internet as we continue on a Tuesday afternoon on Drive Time. Giving away Twins kit tickets today. The Twins gave away most of the team last week. So, you know, still fun to go to the ballpark, right? Especially when it's free. Four tickets for Saturday between now and 5 o'clock at some point.
Yeah, don't call now.
You'll hear that sound effect. Dan would hate it if you called now. But would you hear the sound effect? 651-461-9226 is the number to call. Greg Swan is with us. And I have noticed this, Greg, over the last kind of couple days, where there are more questions on websites about your age. And this is all because of the United Kingdom. A law in the UK. On the surface, literally no one is upset on the surface with the idea of keeping adult stuff away from kids.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of porn on the internet. And so the idea of requiring some ID, it on the surface makes a lot of sense. But what's the problem with it?
It does. Well, it goes to the idea of who decides and then how. And then also, where does that information go? So you mentioned you have had to do, some of us have done, we have to hold your ID up next to your face.
Right.
You send it into some sort of secure process server. They theoretically are approving you and deleting that content. I think we've learned over the years some healthy skepticism.
Yeah.
Of where that content
right.
is. And so
even the most secure kind of well-respected sort of data handlers get hacked, make mistakes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, of anything, I guess social security card would be the worst thing for people to get
Probably.
Their hands on, but driver's license is pretty close.
Yeah, right? And I think, you know, so we've lived in a generation where every person in your neighborhood's name and their address was printed in a book and put on your front step at least once a year.
Yes.
To the idea that your address, it unlocks, you can go to Zillow and see how much that person bought on their house. You can Google them and figure out who they're related to and what their name is. Like our privacy, it exists around the idea of who we are. And also the rise in AI is also making that sketchy too. Mm-hmm. So then we layer on top this idea of absolutely we should be careful of kids and what they have access to. Absolutely.
Right.
Especially when it comes to adult Easy. Sexual content.
Easy. Yeah.
No brainer. Who decides how far that goes? And I think that is where, again, there's some healthy skepticism of those in power globally, locally, where are we legislating things like their access to healthcare information, perhaps like identity information or even like, let's say that I'm really, I have a hobby that's a niche, but it's not dirty.
Right.
Do I need to prove who I am to see that? And we're already seeing platforms like Tinder and Reddit start to step up and say, yes, to use these platforms, you're going to have to prove who you are. Now, Tinder is dating.
Fine.
Fine.
You see like some safety issues.
Fine.
Okay.
Reddit is overrun with trolls. And it also, is. That is a place if you are a person who's looking for your others and you can't find them regionally for forever since the birth of the internet, you've been able to go find your others
yeah.
on the
yeah.
internet. And so
and through an anonymous gateway to be able to do that.
Correct. And is there abuse sometimes? Yep.
Yeah. But isn't that the cost of freedom?
Is it abuse to withhold that from everyone? Yes,
yeah.
it is.
Yeah.
And so who decides? And even in Minnesota, there has been proposed legislation to limit access to social media sites alone.
Yeah.
For, you know, letting those, you know, under 15 not have access to Instagram, for example. And so what we're seeing
with Roblox has added some age verification
correct.
As well.
So what we're seeing with this age-gated internet happening in the UK is really a signal where things are probably coming here, given where the administration is and where some of the winds are here, meaning the United States. I think that we're going to start to see different states make different choices, and then the platforms will make different choices. Just like many platforms pulled out of India or pulled out of Europe when there was overly stringent things,
right?
They may choose not to be here or maybe not to be in a specific state.
Politicians love this stuff because on a very surface level, it's incredibly attractive. Where you're like, yes, protect children. Yes, you, because most people are not trolls.
Yeah.
Most people are not engaged in this sort of hate speech
Correct.
On Reddit. So most people are like, this makes a lot of sense. So it's weird to be a good person and a positive participator yeah. on the internet saying like, well, I'm a little nervous about giving all this power
yeah.
to the tech company.
Yeah, and be like, oh, so you're defending that yeah, children should right. see adult no. content? It's like, no, that's a wedge issue. Like, that's not what we're talking about.
That's not it. Yeah.
What we are talking about, though, is there is a history of moral panics of especially young people or different people accessing things like books, different materials, the internet, and there's power involved mm-hmm. in some of
yeah.
that. It's going to be fascinating because this is not going to slow down. And if you remember a couple months ago, I came in really excited because I got my irises scanned to prove that I'm a real person
yes.
so that I can sign in with that login information, maybe to renew my driver's license.
Sometimes we like this stuff when it makes our life easier, but sometimes it's nerve wracking when you worry about.
It's almost like technology is a tool just like fire yeah. Where it can be good and it can be bad and it depends how you use it.
It's almost like that. Greg Swan, we love these monthly visits. You're going to join us at the State Fair, I think.
Cannot wait.
Excellent. Thanks, Greg. You can
See
follow
you on the
Greg
internet.
On the internet. At Greg Swan on X. It's on all of the things. And he did shout out his Substack, which is called...
So the Cave Project,
Substack,
we did a full podcast episode on clankers. If you want to hear me bleep myself saying clanker,
check it out.
Come on out.
Nate Burleson, you know him from CBS This Morning, maybe from Hollywood Squares, former Minnesota Viking. He joins us in just a minute to talk about a new project he's working on and gives a little bit of a hot take on the new Vikings quarterback. We'll talk with Nate in just a minute here on CCO. Is there anything Nate Burleson cannot do? Former Minnesota Viking, incredible broadcaster, is the host of CBS This Morning, the NFL Today. He hosts a game show, the Hollywood Squares. And now he's coming to Minnesota. He'll be in Minneapolis on Saturday, part of the launch of his new vodka from Valentine Distillery, which is in Detroit. The vodka is Lion's Blood Orange. And Nate Burleson joins us on DeRussia Eats. I'm so glad to talk to you, Nate.
I am a huge fan of the distillery that you teamed up with. They're Mayor
really?
Pingree. Yeah, Mayor Pingree is one of my favorite whiskeys. I think mm-hmm. they just do terrific work. And your vodka is delicious. I tasted
Thank
it
you.
Last night. It's really nice.
Thank you.
So many celebrities kind of get in the spirit game now.
Yeah.
What motivated you to want to do something special and do it in Detroit?
All right. So I'm originally from Seattle. When I was playing and living in Seattle at the time, when I would go to the liquor store, I was always trying to support local brands. And there was a Jimi Hendrix vodka. Jimi Hendrix spent some time in Seattle. And I was fascinated by how it looked aesthetically. It was beautiful. It had the purple hints and tones to it with Jimmy and this guitar. And it tasted so good. But then when I would travel, I would never see it on the shelves. This was when I was in the beginning stages of doing my own research about regional and local spirits. So I figured out that Jimi Hendrix Estate released this only in Washington. And even though the estate, one side of the estate, got into it with the other side and they had actually pulled it off the shelves, I realized how successful a local brand can be. Because even though when I traveled outside of Washington, I didn't see it, but when I went to clubs and bars and people's homes, they always had it on the shelves. So when I played for the Detroit Lions, I wanted to do it. I was like, all right, I want to launch a liquor brand here in Michigan. I love Michigan. It was like my final years in the NFL, and I started to apply for this process with a few different people. And one guy saw me and he probably saw Mark. He's like, mm-hmm. I'm going to upcharge whatever it costs to start a brand. And I'm going to tell Nate it's gonna cost him $400,000-$500,000. And then I went to my people, started talking to people in the space. They're like, no, that guy's going to rip you off. So that left a sour taste in my mouth. And then on the flip side, the NFL at that time, they didn't really like players starting brands, working with brands, unless it was directly through the brands that they were working with. You're picking up what I'm putting down, right?
Yeah.
Unless
it was different. They didn't want you doing your own. They didn't want to be your own brand. They didn't want to have an argument with one of their sponsors or partners.
Exactly. So I left, retired. It just was one of those things that irked me. You know, I'm a casual drinker and I see all these brands popping up every once in a while. I said, you know what, Nate, stop having this regret. You know what? Start to explore it again in Michigan. Screw it. At the very least, you'll enjoy the process. So I reached out to a few different brands, distilleries, and companies. And Valentine, they were the only ones to hit me back that saw the vision. And then when I met with Rufino in person, he was checking my pulse, to be honest with you. He's like, what are you in it for? Why are you here? Why do you want to do this? What do you know about this space? Do you understand it's competitive? What are you going to bring to the table outside of some name that used to play here? And I answered all those questions confidently. And he realized at that moment that he had a partner. And then we just got to know each other. And it took us about a year and a half, maybe 2 years, figuring out what we wanted to look like, taste like, smell like. I flew out there 5 or 6 times to just sample the earlier batches. And I didn't double dip. It wasn't like I was going out there to go see a Lions game or to go visit friends or party and like, oh, let me just pop by. No, I went in there specifically to meet with him and didn't tell anybody else that I was coming in town. And that's because I sincerely wanted him to know that I'm in it for the right reasons. The story of how we got here, it really makes me proud that I'm in it for the right reasons. And of course, we're going to build inside out. If it's very successful, we'll continue to make it in Michigan and provide jobs in Michigan. But then if there's opportunities outside of Michigan, Minnesota, and Chicago, and we're in the, we work Midwest to the rest of the nation, we'll do it. But right now, we want to keep it regional.
Yeah, Nate Burleson is with us, coming to Minnesota this weekend to sample his new vodka. He'll be at Certix on Saturday in the afternoon, and then a little later at Haskell's in White Bear Lake. Two great, great family-owned liquor stores, too. I love that, like, you're really just, this is a smaller operation. You could have gone with a giant company. You could have licensed your name. You could have done that. I just have such respect the fact that you really went through the tasting process. Tell me how you landed on Blood Orange, because that's the dominant.
It's a play on words. I am a Leo. You know, I look at myself as a lion. And I've kind of like walked with this tagline of conquer your jungle in any space that you're in, not just an athlete. You know, you can work in media, you can be a politician, you can be a dancer, a rapper, a writer. Whatever profession it is, just chase your craft diligently and conquer your jungle. So I wanted to do something that played on the way I looked at the world. So Lion Blood, I had an old clothing line. It was called Lion Blood Clothing. I'm like, all right, I love citrus flavored vodkas, but I don't often see blood orange in many flavors that taste well. And I knew that blood orange is a unique fruit because it can be very sweet. It can be very tart. It can be sour. It can have a strong, sharp finish. It could also have a very light, sweet, delayed note at the end. If we landed on the perfect complexities of blood orange, adding in elderflower, making it with all natural ingredients, we can make something special.
And it is you mentioned it's a little bit of a tricky flavor to work with. So it's not too it's not too tart. It's not too overwhelming. And there's a balance. There's a little bit of sweetness that comes from an elderflower in here, too, which I think is cool. Well, the tasting process, did you have to dial it up, dial it down to get it just right?
Yeah, very much so. Because the whole Valentine crew knew that I love citrus flavors and this was going to be something that I wanted to taste. The initial ones were heavy on the citrus, and I didn't want the citrus to overcomplicate what could be a smooth finish. I wanted it to be light enough to where you can drink it straight on the rocks, add a little bit of soda, but also heavy enough to where you can mix it and it still stands on its own with other mixers. But when I first got there, yeah, we went heavy on the citrus and immediately I tasted it. And it's funny, Rufino, my partner, he was in there the first couple of times that I flew into Detroit and he's just looking at me as I'm sipping it. And I'm like, this ain't it. And he's like, I'm glad you said that because that's how I feel. And then we tasted another one and I'm like, this is good. Just not exactly where I wanted to be. This particular day, we had three different versions of it. And then he handed me number two, small little glass bottle. It said test number two on it. And as I'm taking a sip, he's staring at me. And I smelled it, of course, to get that profile of the nose and the notes. And then once I took a sip, I looked at him, he looked at me, and we both nodded our head. This is it. And then I was like, do you have ice in here? Because this is warm sitting on the shelf. Let me taste this on the rocks. And once I did that, I was set. Because to me, the mark of a good drink is that you can drink it alone by itself, sip slow, and it doesn't dissipate with the ice, or it doesn't lose its structure, you know, when you want to sip it alone. And also, it doesn't burn your throat. Let's just keep it real.
Nate Burleson is with us. His new vodka is Valentine Lion Blood Orange, and he'll be in the Twin Cities this weekend sampling it, signing bottles, all of that. Obviously, you know, your time here in Minnesota as a member of the Minnesota Vikings, that makes sense that you'll come here and bring this. You're coming to town on our first preseason game.
Yeah.
I mean, I assume you're as curious as we are as to how the new sort of rookie quarterback is going to be.
Yeah, he definitely is a rookie. I was always taught until you play four games, you're going to be a rookie. I remember playing an entire season and they were like, no, you're still a rookie until you play four games into your sophomore season. I'm like, what kind of sense does that make? This was back when old school vets were really old school vets and Hazen was perfectly fine. But for him, he's going to have to get through this rookie year. I know on paper he's a sophomore, but this is going to be a big season for him. Listen, the division is absolutely loaded. The Lions, they are the king of the jungle right now. We know the Bears retooled. Caleb Williams is going to have to step up. Been hearing some mixed reviews on how he's doing in training camp. Of course, the Green Bay Packers with the healthy Jordan Love, like they're always comparable when it comes to competition. But the Vikings, J.J. McCarthy, J.J. Jefferson, Jay Jettas, he's going to have to be handcuffed to the hip of his wide receiver. Usually it's the wideout and tight end that are handcuffed to the veteran quarterback saying, hey, let's go out to dinner. What's your favorite pair of shoes I can buy you? Do you want me to send you on a vacation? Because I need 140 balls this year. But it's going to have to be J.J. McCarthy that is going to have to take out his tight end, take out his wide receiver, get to know them, stay after practice, watch film together, because life is going to come at you fast, young fella. And I hope he's successful.
It was terrific talking to you. I know a ton of people are going to come see you at Haskell's in White Bear Lake at 3:30 in the afternoon on Saturday and then noon at Certix right in Minneapolis.
I appreciate you taking the time, man.
I love it. Nate, this was such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right, Jay, have a good one.
Let's take the current temp of your Minnesota Twins. Brought to you by Chef IQ Sense. Get your wireless meat thermometer now at chefiq.com.
Temp of the team is cold. The Twins struggled last night. Detroit is good. And Detroit won 6-3. Tonight, who's pitching for us? Zebby Matthews, I think. And so, you know.
Zebby Matthews pitching for the Twins, pitching for the Detroit Tigers, won Chris Paddock.
Yeah. Oh, so, that's tonight.
That's tonight.
All right. So that'll be fun.
Yep.
That'll be worth listening
Absolutely.
To hear how that goes. Nate Burleson, such a great conversation that we have with Nate. And in fact, Dan uploaded the whole conversation.
You can take credit. That's fine.
Well, you weren't down in the closet under my stairs.
You're right, I wasn't.
8:30 this morning when I talked to the Nate Burleson. So search DeRussia Eats, the DeRussia Eats podcast. Nate and I talk a little bit more about accountability in the NFL. We talk about how a dermatologist visit in his early days in New York changed his life. Lots of good stuff with Nate. Super nice guy. So check that out. Search DeRussia Eats wherever you get podcasts. Should we do a full show tomorrow? Probably not.
Nah, they're on during the day, so we'll be a little bit late.
Twins day game. Enjoy the game. We'll talk to you tomorrow.